Welcome to, well, what are we calling it?
I've got an idea of what to call it.
Yeah. Do you?
Potentially, Havers versus Crabs.
Oh, really? You're going to put them...
The battle that mankind has been crying out for since Havers was born.
Not exclusively the wisdom of Havers, but...
Oh, well, no, yeah.
A toe-to-pincer. Potentially.
Maybe let... Ben, give the audience a bit of background here. We've had some fun, but now let's fill in the gaps for us.
Okay, so this is our first non-film corner or non-Bonjo's House of Pain bonus format.
Yeah,
yeah.
The idea is it's a kind of an agony aunt style format where we encounter agony aunt style questions from our listening audience.
It's been intensively workshopped with focus groups across the nation, hasn't it?
Yes. I mean, we're recording. I'm saying this is the first time we've done it. It's the first time we've done it in such a way that we're going to put out.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've used the 10,000 hour system, haven't we? Which is it's been absolutely punishing. So we started.
It's a thought experiment. 10,000 hours. So that's right. What we mean by that is we've done the wisdom of crabs as an agony aunt thing in live shows.
Mm. That's right.
That, I mean, that would have been probably a maximum of an hour, but to the audience, it would have felt like 10,000 hours.
It would have, exactly. So yeah. It's all relative, isn't it? And also in crab years, it would be be 7 or 8 generations, wouldn't it? Crabs in that time, I think. It's funny, for someone that owns a book about crabs, I actually don't know much about the little blighters.
So for those of you who don't know, in our live shows, we've occasionally done a format called The Wisdom of Crabs.
That's right.
Where we've taken agony aunt style questions from the audience, and then we've divined an answer from Henry's book, which is called Crabs?
It's called Crabs.
Mm. Who's it by, by the way? We've never given any credence
to Peter J.F. Davey.
Ah.
Which, of course, is an anagram for... I mean, it's no coincidence.
Pincer-mageddon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he may well be one of them, and there isn't a photo of him. So actually, he may well be one of them. And he does write left to right, which is how crabs move half of the time.
Yes.
I don't know if that's a clue.
So Henry delves into this book. The audience would give Henry their problems, and he's guided. You're more a vessel, aren't you?
That's right. I randomly sort of pick a page, randomly pick a line with the help of the audience, with the help of sort of vibes, isn't it?
Yeah.
With the help of the question, it provides vibes. Weirdly, a lot of the time, it's just some like random nonsense about crabs, isn't it? That's got nothing to do with their problem.
It can be hard to crowbar the facts about crabs into the problem, but you find a way.
It can be. Yeah,
but there's a new guru in town.
Yeah.
Isn't there?
Well, if you think about it, crabs.
Oh, go on.
They're ancient, they're wise, and they are our future. Mm-hmm. Now, I could have been describing crabs, or I could have been describing Nigel Havers, couldn't I? With exactly the same sentence.
Yeah.
He's wise. Well, he's getting on a bit. He's been around for a while. And
he fertilises thousands of eggs every year.
Thousands of eggs every year. And sets them free into the English Channel, doesn't he? In a ritual that's always attended by the great and the good of London's theatre scene. It was described as grotesque by the Evening Standard.
And that is, to get a grotesque off the Evening Standard is, you've made it, basically.
It's got to be absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean... even that production of Equus where everyone had had food poisoning but still went ahead with the show didn't get a grotesque.
And fair play to Daniel Radcliffe for trooping on through that one.
He's a worker. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Yeah. The man's a worker.
Yeah. He invoked Dr. Theatre, didn't he? But unfortunately, Dr. Theatre was...
He also had food poisoning.
If anything, was making the situation worse.
Yeah.
This might be a bit confusing for so many reasons.
Mm.
So some people won't know who Nigel Havers is. Yep. That's a fair position to take or to find yourself in.
We're assuming everyone knows what a crab is.
Yeah, I think we can take that for granted.
So let me just, I'll tell you what, I'll do something to help people out a bit.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, listeners from beyond the UK might not know who Havers is. So just for clarity, Nigel Havers is a type of crustacean belonging to the order Decapoda and the infraorder Brachyuria. He's characterised by his broad, flattened body, covered by a hard exoskeleton made of chitin and calcium carbonate. He has a pair of pincers on his front limbs and generally walks in a sideways motion. And he was in Chariots of Fire.
and trained at the Bristol Old Vic. Yeah.
So that should give you a picture. Man, if you want to know which one he is in the Chariots of Fire, he's the one that goes along the beach sideways, doesn't he?
and then they all keep going along the sand and he just scuttles off into a rock pool, doesn't he?
That's right. And if people want to know, if people don't know what crabs are, I give you a quick summary. A crab is a type of English actor known for their work in television, film, and theatre. Mm-hmm. They're generally born in England in the 1950s, and recognisable for their charm, their wit, and their adeptness at portraying suave upper class characters. And they will, if in a tight corner, they will eat their own young. So that's. I can't remember what that was. That was Havers, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway.
So Henry has his book, his crab book, which has served him well over the years.
Yeah, Rhythm of Crabs.
We've now purchased a new book.
Mm.
A new book enters the fray. It's Nigel Havers's Playing with Fire.
Mike's got the paperback.
Have I got the cheapskate version?
So we've all got a copy of this.
You get paperback, you get him in profile on the cover.
Yeah, whereas he's straight on them.
He's straight on with you guys.
Mine's got a quote from Dawn French. Has yours got the quote from Dawn French?
It does, yes. As adorable and fun as the man himself. Is that, have you got the same one?
Yes. Yeah, okay.
He's a national treasure, basically.
Yeah. He,
and this is his memoir.
He's a great actor. He's the kind of actor who probably, he may have been in the frame for Bond at a time. He's just very suave.
Yeah, he could have been a good Bond.
In the Roger Moore era. In the Roger Moore era.
Very good at playing floppy-haired public school types. But with a winning smile, and maybe a bit of a Hugh Grant of his era, slight bit of Hugh Grant in there.
Yeah,
yeah, probably less famous kind of worldwide.
But
certainly similar vibe, definitely.
Yeah.
What I want to say about this book is I've not read it yet. I think I will.
Mm.
My thing with autobiographies is it's always a bad sign if you open it, say, a quarter of the way in, and they're still doing childhood.
Oh, interesting.
And that's when the geography teacher starts to introduce us to the A-level syllabus.
Exactly.
If that's me, if you're 100 pages in. Yeah.
So very often I kind of skip childhood sometimes and then just get into the meat of it.
Okay.
And then everything changed because Nodgy Wilson had a new pencil case. you're looking out for those kinds of phrases, aren't you?
Exactly. Or time spent at a beloved grandparent's house and remembering the smells. Not interested.
Now, with any autobiography... The other thing that one generally does first is flick through to the photo section.
Oh, of course.
Yep. Isn't it? Now, which is often the only bit of an autobiography I'll actually read. Now, the autobiography section of this one has a very, very strong start. So it's a black and white photo of a classic British High Court judge. So he's wearing the kind of cape and he's got the strange wig that they all wear. So he looks like a classic High Court judge. And underneath it says, Grandpa. Wearing the uniform that he wore to sentence Ruth Ellis to death in 1955.
I'm thinking she's the last person to hang.
Yeah, she was a very, very famous case because she was the last. Was she the last woman or just the last person to be hanged in Britain?
I think maybe last person. I'm not sure.
So I had no idea that was
the last woman.
Okay, last woman.
I just thought, it was a hell of a sentence to read in Nigel Havers' autobiography because I imagine he keeps it light most of the time.
Yeah, well, that's his thing.
He's light.
He is light. He's light and breezy.
But also, as you're right, Henry, like, it's a really good start. It's a really good... It augurs well for the book as a whole.
Mm.
It really does.
On the next page, there's a picture of someone in naval uniform.
Oh, yeah.
And it says, Second Lieutenant Havers at the end of the war. Three times the ship he served on was torpedoed. Three times he survived.
Nice.
Yeah.
And apologies to any British listeners, but Ben is saying lieutenant for the benefit of our international listeners.
Oh, Mike, come on. What am I meant to say?
Lieutenant.
Because of something to do with the French.
Because that's what Havers wants.
I'm sorry, Mike.
But that's a classic, again, a classic thing to have in autobiography is that you want a black and white photo of a relative who was in the war.
Because he's sort of, when was he born? He's not, he's, would have, was 50, he a babe?
51.
So he's classic boomer, so he's well beyond.
He's boomer, isn't he, yeah. He's really solidly entrenched boomer. That's why he's, to be honest, that's why he's got that slightly smug, look at that slightly smug expression. It says,
it's boomer, isn't it?
Getting on the property ladder was an absolute piss take for me. Absolute piss take. I've literally never had less than two sheds in any property I've owned. Isn't it? And that, yeah, he's got that boomer. He's got that boomer natural deep confidence.
Yeah,
the world's been pretty kind to him.
Wonderful.
Also, clearly, so his dad, second Lieutenant Havers, at the end of the war, three times his ship was torpedoed. Also, he's got that classic boomer thing, just very lightly treating the fact that his dad clearly somehow drew attention to the ships he was on to the Nazis, and was probably responsible for the death of 200 or 300 souls. Maybe for putting on productions of plays.
Of Whale Song the Musical.
Of Whale Song the Musical. Well, on it. Well, on those boats.
We're taking some of the major institutions, aren't we? We've got the judiciary. We've got the Admiralty. We've got
the death penalty. We've got everything that made Britain great. Haven't we? We've got the state murder of women. It's absolute boom manner to boot.
This is ludicrously huge navy. Provocatively large navy. And now none of that.
So we've had a lot of emails from people. I've not really looked through them properly, so I'm just going to randomly pick Agony Aunt questions.
Okay.
We will put them to the books. And we will see. I think there's three stages, really. There's the advice given to them by the Havers book.
Yeah.
There's the advice given to them by the Crab book.
Okay.
And I think if we have any of our own thoughts, we can probably throw those in as well.
We can put those in as well.
Okay, so it's time for our first Agony Aunt problem. This has been sent in by Anon.
Fair play, Anon.
Yeah.
I think a lot of these are probably Anon. I've picked this
great
totally
writer
randomly.
Anon, but it's quite a privilege.
Great writer,
to have
very
Anon.
Difficult personal life, though. I mean, the two often go together.
They do.
I've picked it totally at random. It's a bit salacious, but maybe a good one to kick off with.
Great.
Oh, okay.
Bit of a nasty problem.
I think Havers is no stranger to salaciousness, and the sex lives of crabs are utterly, utterly obscene. So we're in the right.
Dear Beans, my wife and I, this is very adult, are keen on a threesome.
Whoa.
Good Lord.
But aren't clear on how and where to find someone to join us.
Blimey.
Does one just ask around your existing friendship groups? That seems like a surefire way to lose friends. But as a slightly overweight late 30s man of at best mediocre looks, I don't like my chances of being able to convince a stranger. Also, when approaching strangers, do you need to go up together? It feels a bit like ganging up on someone. The alternative, though, is sending my wife up first. I wonder, however, that I would then be a crushing disappointment to the new person when they eventually meet me. Any advice would be gratefully received. Anon. So let's see what the crabs have to say about this knotty problem.
Okay.
So I'm gonna say stop, and Henry will stop flipping through the book. So let's go. Stop.
Okay. Well, I've just ended up. Well, I mean, I've ended up on a picture foot page.
Okay.
I knew there'd be flaws in this format. I knew this, then the flaws would be exposed. The flaws would be exposed. And they've been hugely explosively exposed, which is basically what the Wisdom of Crabs is suggesting is do this or the nearest human equivalent.
Oh, wow. What is it? What's it? What is it?
It's hiding in amongst some sea anemones.
You need to hide amongst some sea anemones and then pounce. So in human terms, that might mean hiding behind some plants, do you think, maybe?
Or some recycling bins.
Or behind some recycling bins.
Mm.
And that's why a crab would do it.
Yeah.
Wait till the person that you fancy walks past.
and then sign up.
And then grab. Now, can I say, it's very important, this is the wisdom of crabs, this is not the wisdom of us. We wouldn't necessarily suggest something like this, because it's pretty aggressive, but crabs are.
Maybe, can I suggest that maybe the crabs are suggesting a test of sorts? Maybe a crab is suggesting that the way you find the one is for the pair to conceal themselves.
Okay.
As the crab is doing, amongst some recycling bins or amongst some flotsam and jetsam on the beach and well concealed, but the person who spots them.
Be found rather than...
Be found and let them make the approach, you see.
Okay, so what the situation you've got there is you've got a couple in their late 30s hiding behind some recycling bins.
Yeah. Most people are just going to walk by them or actively avoid them.
And someone's going to see that and go, ooh.
I'm interested.
I mean, it sounds to me, Anon, as if you're going to be shagging a security guard of some sort.
It's going to be a security guard or a waste disposal person. Possibly someone in organised crime, isn't it? There's a lot of overlap,
yeah,
isn't there, with waste disposal and organised crime.
You never know. It could just be a smoking hot fly tipper. We don't know.
Could be, yeah.
Now, I think that's... So, should we stick with that, or do you want to have a go at what was on the next page as well?
I think the crab book has spoken, to be
honest. The crab book has spoken. Yeah. It speaks in many ways. It speaks in many tongues.
And it has given us a solution. Let's see what Nigel Havers' solution would be. Okay. So, Michael, do the same. He's going to flick through the book, and I'll say stop. Stop.
Okay. One day during a break in filming, Leslie Ann and I had a heated argument about, of all things, Harrods. I maintain that it was a well-known fact that one could order absolutely anything from Harrods.
Oh,
okay.
He proved they get an argument. This person, Leslie Ann, doesn't agree with him. And he phones Harrods to test it. And he says, hello, I'd like to buy an elephant, please, I said. And from down the line, they say, of course, sir. Would you prefer African or Indian? I think that proved my point.
I was going to say that it's true that Harrods used to have this, I don't know if it still does, used to have this sort of zoo-type section where you could just buy, like amazing exotic animals and stuff. Anyway, so Mike, could reread that first bit at the top again, please, can you? It was about...
He's having an argument with Leslie Ann.
See, already there's potentially, is that not a threesome? We've got Leslie and Dan.
It's not Leslie and Dan. It's someone called Leslie Ann.
Ah, okay.
Are you suggesting, but maybe we need to read deeper? I mean, Henry is the one with the English literature degree, so maybe you and I just read it as a person called Leslie Ann. Henry sees
I'm reading the subtext, which is something that only people with English degrees know about.
Use of hyphens.
So, Mike, what's your take, Mike?
I think Harrods is figurative, but I think there is a place where this can be dealt with, and I think Harrods is no longer what it used to be. So, what is the modern day Harrods? What is Harrods to us today?
I'm going to say Halfords.
Halfords.
It's Sonic Twin.
I think it's Halfords.
It's got
I think
to be
it's
Halfords.
Worth a punt if they go down to Halfords.
It's got to be because
accommodating in Halfords.
They're very accommodating in Halfords. There's a range of different thicknesses of different types of heat-proof gloves and stuff, aren't there? And things which, might be sexy to you if you're that way inclined.
Yeah. I will say that both the crab and the Havers answer so far is slightly ethically dubious because you've got one, hide in some undergrowth, and then two, just pay for it. Just find a way to pay for it.
Yes.
Which we both feel sort of ethically interesting.
Might not be
what are they, how are they saying pay for it in Harrods? Are they saying pay for it in Halfords, are they? Do you think?
Well, he says you can buy anything in Harrods, right? So that tells me that his advice is to say,
yes.
If you want something done.
So you go to Halfords and there's probably, what he's implying is there's a special thing you say, which is, I'd also like thanks for your service. Can I also have a diesel windscreen wiper? I'll go, but that doesn't even make any sense. There's no such thing as a diesel. Hang on a second.
Yeah.
That's the code word for the underground brothel. You get access to the underground brothel.
Yeah, and then we're in tricky territory, aren't we? Which Anon might not be what Anon is after.
And then in terms of advice from us, I don't really have any. I think I've not found myself in this situation.
Because threesomes have always just presented themselves to you, haven't they? It's never been something you've had to... You just have accidentally stumbled into them, almost too many. I mean, for you, it's like, bloody hell, I wouldn't mind having a twosome for a bloody change. Isn't it? I remember you saying that to me once. what I think isn't the answer go online. That's what the internet's for, isn't it? There'll be communities and safe places where people that are into this kind of thing can get together.
In the provinces, famously, if you're into swinging, you grow pampas grass outside your driveway.
Yeah.
So maybe if you're not interested in the couple but just one person, maybe it's just pampas grass but on one side of your driveway, if you've got a driveway, or of your door, if you've got a door.
And if pampas grass feels, if you're not very good at gardening and maintaining plants, and you think it's a bit too subtle, you could probably find someone online who'd make you a big flashing penis-shaped neon sign, maybe. like those 1950s yeah. American motels have.
Yeah.
Out on the street. Just an idea.
Yeah. Saying, like, pull in here, rooms available.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Golly.
Yeah, I think... I could see that it's tricky, isn't it? Because how do you bring that up? He suggested talking to his friends. I think that's a terrible idea. I think you'll stink out some friendships there, potentially.
I think his instincts are correct on that.
So don't go amongst your friends' cohort.
Yeah. Fair play to him. I mean, I wouldn't have guessed that we were necessarily the first port of call. But I guess it's the wisdom of havers and crabs that we're
having. It's the wisdom of havers and crabs. I mean, havers, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that havers has had threesomes, but I would have thought, I'm not sure if they would have got into the book necessarily. Because of his squeaky clean image. But it's a mixture with havers, isn't it? If you look at his eyes, it's squeaky clean and also devil. Devil incarnate, but in a squeaky clean way. Do you know what I mean?
He's a squeaky rotter.
And maybe that's the reason to this day why he still doesn't have or does have an MBE or the equivalent, as far as I know, which I don't.
Exactly. And if he does have one, why it also may, if things get exposed about, and things get rescinded or probably or won't, if nothing gets exposed, or if there is nothing to be exposed anyway, not get rescinded. Yeah. By the way, can I say, I do like the choice they've gone on the cover of that lovely sepia. Do you think it's nice? It's not quite black and white. It's a lovely sepia.
It's flattering, isn't it? He doesn't need flattering, but it is flattering.
But also, it's classic. He is classic. And he's wearing a dark turtleneck. He's classic.
Yeah, which very few men can pull off.
Yeah.
Well, you say he's wearing a dark turtleneck. I say he's wearing quite a bright gold Nigel Havers jumper, isn't he?
Sorry, you're right. Actually, really quite garish. It's like, we get it, mate. You know, yeah. Yeah.
Right. Next problem. This one's less salacious.
Okay.
This is from someone who describes themselves as Professor Potamogeton. Professor Potamogeton?
Okay.
Okay. I'd be absolutely amazed if you're pronouncing that right.
I bought a second-hand watch from eBay this week.
Mm.
It's in good nick. But the watch strap smells strongly of the previous owner's choice of aftershave. I hate it. I'm making increasingly desperate efforts to get rid of the smell. I'm worried that I'm approaching Lady Macbeth levels of desperation. Mm. I've washed the strap with soapy water, then dish soap, then bicarbonate of soda, an overnight bath in isopropyl alcohol, and now it's been through the dishwasher twice, and it still smells of sandalwood and Lynx. I'm at my wit's end. Please help, Beans. Professor Potamogeton.
Is it just the strap he's put in the washing dishwasher? The whole thing?
Yes, I think so.
He, she. Do we know what the material is of the professor's watch strap?
They haven't told us. No,
but it smells of aftershave.
I mean, your watch strap. I'd be interested to see what the crabs say about this. And when a watch strap isn't a notoriously stinky creature, isn't it?
Yeah,
typically.
Two things about me: that I don't wear watches.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely extraordinary that I'm as punctual as I am. When you think about it, and also I don't wear smells.
Fragrance.
I don't wear a fragrance.
No, neither do I.
So, do any of the beans wear smells?
I do. Wear smells. I do wear a watch, but this is not. It's a non-smelly because it's basically just plastic. Do you know what I mean?
See,
as opposed to your leather or your fabric straps, it's gonna get stinky in time.
Yeah, it's gonna absorb a lot of sweat. So Ben, have you always worn aftershave, Ben? I don't remember. I'm trying to think if I associate you with a certain smell. I mean, I'm thinking sandalwood, I'm thinking woody, lemony, a little bit of cinnamon in there, but nothing more than that. Maybe some undertones of oak, tobacco, a little bit of lavender. So all I think of with you is like a sort of autumnal, a kind of woody, a cinnamony.
That's interesting.
But with some citrus notes running through it.
I get the heavy eastern spices with a hint of sort of Antipodean jockstrap.
Ah, nice. Mm.
Okay. I don't have to spray that bit on. That's pre-existing.
Yeah, Mike and I rely on our natural body masks, don't we?
which I've been collecting, and I spray it on.
Oh, you get the combination of
the combo. I can absorb both of their powers.
But yeah, the back of a watch is tricky. One of the worst smells.
It's got a bad reputation.
Yeah.
So how to get rid of the smell on the back of a watch? Let's ask the crabs, shall we? Or do you want to ask, should we start with Quavers? Should we start with
Nigel Quavers?
Should we start with Nigel Quavers this time?
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Okay, let's do it. Yeah.
Okay.
So now, just so people know, it's about feeling the wisdom. See, Nigel Quavers has wisdom. So when Ben says, you know, start going through it and then stop, you're feeling it, aren't you? You're trying to feel his wisdom coming up through the book.
Yeah.
And trying to, and there's a connection between... Because you've read out the email, between the email and Havers, yeah? So there's a lot of...
Wisdom. Not,
there you go. Oh, very nice. Wisdom.
Okay, I'm ready.
He's... That's because... You know how they got him to do that photo? They showed him his property portfolio and how much his various properties have gone up since he bought them in the 70s. That's the only way to get a really natural smile off him. most of the acting he does, if he's in a happy scene, they get a big screen and they blow up pages from Rightmove on it. Which he looks at and just
and it doesn't feel awkward because every member of his generation has a tennis court.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, start flicking through. Much,
yeah. Okay.
Stop.
It's gone straight. It's gone salacious immediately.
Oh no, bloody Havers!
And the first sentence I read was the thought of it was a real erection killer.
Oh my God.
And it hung over me like that bloody sword everyone always goes on about.
Was this because he met someone that didn't have a tennis court?
Let's have a look. Oh, it's about meeting Harold Pinter.
And how he's a big boner killer.
We were a sellout. And this carried on as the weeks went by. However, there were two words that kept me from getting carried away. Harold Pinter. Our rehearsals for his play were due to start very soon. One day I bumped into him in the theatre. How's it going, Nigel? Managed to learn it yet? Of course, I hadn't so much as looked at it. Almost, I mumbled. The thought of it was a real erection killer. Why has he got an erection at the beginning of this encounter? And it hung over me like that bloody sword everyone always goes on about. Eventually there was nothing for it. I had to knuckle down.
What a charming rascal. So is his USP sort of thing in this book that he was like, he sort of didn't really try very hard, didn't do much work, but because he was so busy being a charming rascal with a massive property portfolio. Is that going to be the vibe of the book, do you think?
I don't know. It feels like that's what's happening in this episode of his life.
Because he's saying, of course, I hadn't learned it yet, as if that's kind of...
Yes.
That's understood by this point. Which also suggests he almost certainly hasn't written his book. Doesn't it? Let's face it. It's basically a confession that he hasn't written the book. And then the next question would be, has he read the book?
Hang on, Pam's trying to come in.
Come on, Pam. And basically, it's a bit like the tree in the woods, isn't it? If something happens in Nigel Havers' book, but he hasn't written it or read it, did it happen to Nigel Havers?
Did he actually have an erection the whole time?
Did he actually? He actually had a boner throughout his season playing the his season in The Caretaker.
Okay, interesting. So it's not going to be easy to divine some advice about watch straps from this, but Mike, what are you getting off the page? What's the subtext there?
It's interesting, isn't it? Is it? I wonder if it's a little bit...
Because I think I know what it's saying.
Cryptic. I think he's going route one with cleaning materials at the moment. And I think he needs to find something that is abhorrent, you know, the metaphorical erection killer.
Okay.
And chase away the smell in that way. I'm not suggesting he literally puts the watch around his own willy. If he's got a willy, I don't know if it's a he or a she.
I didn't think you were suggesting that, by the way.
Great. Okay.
Yeah, not exactly.
So safe as houses on that front. So great. Do you think like something like a really like violent chemical he's suggesting, like terps or
but nothing spirit would ever be used for cleaning. I think you're looking for
an industrial vinegar, maybe.
Deodorize it. You're trying to clean it. You've got to deodorize it.
Do you know what I think it means, though, Mike? I think what I'm getting from that passage is that, like Professor Potter Mogaton, with all his cleaning, he's trying too hard. He's not doing it the Havers way.
Yes.
Very good. Havers wouldn't try all these different methods, would he? He'd just half-arse it and get away with it.
Or he would take that. Right. He would take that watch strap on a river cruise to Hampton Court Palace.
Yeah,
wouldn't he?
Seduce it. Over seduce a cream it. Bun.
Cream bun. Yeah. And actually, Mike, you know what? I take it back. He would wrap it around his willy. In the toilets of the cafe at Hampton Court Palace.
And were Harold Pinter to say, "Oh, have you cleaned that watch strap yet?"
Yeah,
you'd have to lie and go, "Yeah, I think so." And then,
especially if it was around your willy at the time, wouldn't it? It'd be, yeah.
So that's what I think. That's what I think Hagen is getting at. Shout,
so you see, I've got a different interpretation.
Mm. Okay,
which is I think he's saying knuckle down. He didn't knuckle down. He realised he had to knuckle down to learn the Pinter plays. Actually, just get some bling and get your knuckles on it and knuckle it. Just work harder, scrub really hard.
Okay.
And just give it some more elbow grease.
It's a bit like Christianity, isn't it? About how two people can come to two completely separate interpretations of this
Nigel
text.
Havers is so much like Christianity, isn't he? Yeah, I've always thought that. There's two interpretations of him. Yeah. And if you cut Nigel Havers, does he bleed his actual blood? Or does he bleed wine?
Or wine.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
I wouldn't be surprised as a boomer if he does bloody bleed wine. Different wines out of different fingers. He cuts ring finger for Sauvignon Blanc. Yeah. Nice Pinot in the middle finger.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So bloody lucky, aren't they?
Pinky's a bit of chlorine for the swimming pool.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Maybe the crabs can help settle it. Maybe the crabs will...
Okay. Okay, let's do it. Okay, so what's he going to do? What's he do about a smelly watch strap?
Yeah.
Get a flicking in.
I'm going to start a flicking now. Ben, feel it. Yeah, don't just say it. Feel the wisdom of the crabs.
Okay.
Picture a crab. How many legs has it got?
8?
No, 10, I think.
Okay, let's go. Stop.
And I'm going to do the finger thing.
You've used the wrong book, you idiot.
Oh,
you've picked
up
the Havers book.
Maybe Havers wants to say something else.
Okay.
We have to respond to these things.
Yeah, okay.
I think the two of you would be absolutely rubbish at a seance. You've got to believe in the power of these things. Yeah, I'm open-minded about stuff. Yeah? Come on.
Were you saying your crab book scuttled away to the side?
It scuttled away to the side.
The Havers book.
Book has somehow made itself more prominent.
Okay.
Tell me when to stop.
Stop.
An hour later, the phone rang. My father took the call. Sometime afterwards, he came back into the room. I shall be defending the Rolling Stones. Pretty good, isn't it?
Oh, it's pretty good.
That's a great quote. I'm not sure how to divine any kind of helpful advice from that, to be honest. But
could you roll stones over it?
Mm.
Like pumice stones?
Interesting.
Get your knuck... put that... Maybe this is a follow-up to... I think Havers' spirit, even though he's still alive.
Mm. Yeah.
But his spirit was aware that we needed a bit more information. I think the thing about putting some muscle into it was correct. And Havers wanted to add to that by saying, rub some stones onto it.
Yeah. Mm. Or paint it black. Do you know what I mean? Just literally.
Or paint it black.
Paint over it. Paint over it.
Very good. And you will get some satisfaction.
Lovely stuff.
Anyway, let's ask the crabs.
Okay. I've got the book out.
Okay.
What should you do about the smelly strap? Tell me when. Yeah.
Keep going. Stop.
I'm going to use the finger.
Okay.
Tell me when. Feel it, Ben. Don't just say it. Feel crabs.
Stop.
Smell crap. Chelipeds come in a great range of shapes and sizes.
Great.
Each enabling different combinations of speed and power to suit different purposes.
No, this is good.
Generally, heavy, muscle-filled chelipeds move more slowly than lighter, weaker ones, with exceptions.
Okay, what I'm getting from that is quite strong, actually, and it also aligns with my own advice for this correspondent, which is just get a new watch strap.
Yes, that's so true.
But I think the crabs are telling us that when they're talking about the different combinations that can be created.
Ben. Yes, yeah. You are feeling it. You're feeling the crabs, Ben. I knew you were the one.
That's the combination of watch strap to watch, which is a changeable feast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get a new watch.
And I think is the only answer here.
Yeah.
Thoughts, Mike?
It's very good. And I think with the Rolling Stones, because what do the Rolling Stones represent, really, but sort of immortality, a refusal to die.
Yes.
Mm. And that's what you want from this secondhand heirloom type watch. But that doesn't have to be the thing in its entirety. Yes. Right? Bits of the Rolling Stones are replaceable.
In the same way that Mick Jagger has...
The drummer has died.
same way. And they didn't try and clean the drummer and get him back on stage, did they? They didn't put him in a dishwasher. They didn't rub various chemicals into him. They gave him a respectful burial at sea. I'm guessing. But and they got a new drummer. It's exactly the same. It's exactly the same.
And that watch strap won't get royalties and stuff on.
It's a session watch strap.
A session
basically,
watch strap,
isn't
it?
But actually, a very, very good watch strap, though. To be fair,
it might be world class.
It could be a world class.
You're
watch
just going to worry about it less. Is it it's an advantage, you know?
Yeah, mm. But it's still just an hourly fee, isn't it? Yeah. Despite no matter how, and even though that watch strap has been worn by Billy.
Billy Joel. Billie Eilish. Yeah.
Yeah. Billy Bragg.
Yeah.
And that's just the Billies.
Yeah.
Little extra bit of info from the crabs here just to finish up. I think this has been a very, very clean answer. Very clear, very clean.
It has, yeah.
There's a photo and it says next to it, opposite, crab claws, for which we're reading watch straps, come in a huge variety of shapes and sizes. Which I think will be true of watch straps. I mean, often they'll be the same, roughly the same shape, but they'll be a rectangle.
And you'll need to get the size that corresponds to the watch. Yes.
But hear me out. Crab claws, watch straps, come in a huge variety of shapes and sizes that reflect the lifestyle and diet of their owners.
Okay.
Some crush, some scrape, and some attack.
Well, some people do go for vegan leather.
Yes. Exactly, there you go.
Yeah.
If they feel that way about things. Yeah.
Yeah.
So some people would abhor this sort of plasticky business.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to want it to be made out of sort of bits of bark and organic.
But in a way, I think what that is implying to me is you're in a great position here by replacing the watch strap. You can get one that suits you. It doesn't need to suit this previous owner that wore loads of aftershave.
Yes.
Why not find a watch strap that suits you?
Yeah. It's empowering. It's an empowering moment.
I almost look forward to the reign of the crabs when they're on this good form.
When they're this empathetic.
Because they will rule. They will rule fair. They'll rule clean.
Yeah.
And they will. But they will snip your head off if you say much.
They're the ultimate benevolent dictator.
Yeah, the ultimate benevolent
dictator.
Within
reason.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, this is non-anon. I anon it for them?
Would you want to be anon in this situation?
Maybe, yeah.
Do an initial?
Maybe anon it then.
Or anon it, yeah.
I'm a chef on yachts.
Ooh,
cool.
I have just left a job that I really hated.
Oh.
Brackets, horrible yacht owners who treated the crew like slaves.
Brackets.
So my question is, do I find another job on a yacht, brackets, good money, no tax, 6 months of the year off work, close brackets, or find something on land, brackets, longer hours, less pay, close brackets, and get a slightly more normal work-life balance? Kinds of regards, in limbo, anon.
Oh, that's a tough one, isn't it?
Mm,
I'm sorry to hear that was a rough job, because it kind of sounds like a dream job in a way, doesn't it?
Well, I know, Mike, that you are a fan of the BBC television, not BBC, you're a fan of the TV show Below Decks, right?
I am. My sister got me into that a bit. I tend to watch it with my sister exclusively. It's a kind of something we enjoy.
Hmm.
And the Real Housewives series. If we get time, the two of us, then we'll take a deep dive into some serious Real Housewives or Below Deck action.
Excellent.
And it's real
amazing.
Good stuff.
I can't imagine you watching Real Housewives for some reason.
It's real good stuff.
I enjoy picturing it now.
So yeah.
I'm trying to.
But I guess what I mean is, like, you've got a bit of an insight into the world of these yacht-based chefs, etc.
Yeah, I mean, but you never know. You don't know what the reality is necessarily. But I mean, it does seem Below Deck implies that it's tough going, and also massively dependent on your co-workers as well as your
and your billionaire evil boss.
As well as billionaire evils. Because your billionaire evils might be nice, but your co-workers might be a nightmare. Or they might pretend they know what they're doing, and it turns out they don't know what they don't know how to steward a 30-foot yacht. They've never been on a yacht before. Do you know what I mean? They don't know the difference between starboard and port. It's an absolute mess.
Okay,
it's great stuff. But the chef is like, chef's quite a key position, quite a senior member of the crew. They're absolutely pivotal to the whole thing. Because half the reason they're there, the rich punters, right,
is to eat prawns.
They want really good prawns. Yeah. And they want the prawns to be... They want them to be perfectly served. They want the prawns to be poking out over the top of an ice-cold glass.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
With just the right amount of mayonnaise.
Sauce.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Thousand Island, as it's sometimes known.
So they're absolutely pivotal. So I think it's quite a high-stress job. So I can... Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay. The prawn cocktail you make as a chef on a yacht.
But how are you going to find a really good chef? Do you know what I mean? I bet it's hard. I bet there are chefs out there who've got really nice bosses, but they're probably not moving on. Like, they're not vacating that job in a hurry, are they?
But also, like, I don't know much about being a chef. What I do know about being a chef comes exclusively from TV programs.
Right.
In which all of them is just about screaming at the people being screamed at.
Right. Pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah. In a physically very hot, enclosed space, or very cold space if you're dealing with the prawns. Yeah.
Yeah. The only chef I've ever known properly was I once worked in a pub.
Yeah.
And the chef in that pub was a very, very irascible man.
Whoa.
And I remember once I took... a baked potato he'd made was sent back because it was cold on the inside.
Wow.
And I gave it back to him and he said, "It's not as cold as I am on the inside." Now, that story, much like the contents of Nigel Havers playing with fire, didn't happen. But it was a hell of a ride. Much like Nigel Havers in his pomp from 1977 to 1985, when he was the best at sex in the world.
All of Soho.
All of Soho, and therefore the world. No, I did. Sorry, it's true that I did send back a baked potato. Got sent back, but this chef was so angry and just sort of like he was just a very, very he was sort of Gordon Ramsay type, but just terrible, just really, really terrible at cooking. But another thing that I'll never forget about it was the prawn cocktail. Actually, which was what we're talking about. There was a prawn cocktail baguette was offered at this pub.
Yeah,
and I used to see. You know, sometimes you shouldn't look behind the wizard's curtain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or is it that you always shouldn't? In the phrase?
Was it? You live more easily if you don't, I think.
Yeah.
Or but you then don't. The Wizard of Oz, it's good, though, isn't it, that she does say she's
If you want to be a big hero.
But the wizard isn't a really.
But who amongst us is a Dorothy, pulling, really?
Yeah.
You know? Most of us. Yeah. It's blue pill all the way, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Well, don't look in the sausage factory, isn't it? Don't do a tour of a sausage factory. In fact, sausage factory don't do tours, as far as I know.
That's part one of the CEO induction day, isn't it? Please. Yeah. However you revolutionise the sausage factory, please, just one thing, please don't start doing tours.
Please don't. And for that reason, please don't even install railings in any sausage factory. We would rather staff fell into the sausage grinder.
That's useful because that's what sausages are made of, isn't it?
Well, exactly. In fact, we need them. We actually be telling us we need them to fall into the sausage grinder. And that is also the reason why people shouldn't come in. So it's a self-fulfilling, it's a virtuous circle.
We don't know the answer to this.
Yeah.
But we should ask Havers or the crabs, you see.
Yeah, I think.
Because how can we answer this?
Just a quick finish telling you about the prawn cocktail, which is.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
The prawn cocktail in this pub was stored in old, big old ice cream tubs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they would sit there and someone would want a prawn cocktail baguette and the chef would take it down, peel off the lid of this thing which once used to hold vanilla ice cream, peel it off, and inside there was this slop of prawns sitting in their juice, which had separated. So the juice had separated. It also developed a film and a scum. Both. There was a film and a scum on top. It had declarified.
It had stratified.
All the flat globules were separate.
It was erupting in places.
They were erupting in places.
The prawn souls had separated from the bodies themselves. You could see them separately.
you could see the souls trying to get out. That's why the lid had to be on really tight.
Because that's where the flavour is.
That's where the flavour is in the souls. So you'd have to... you'd have to run it through with ketchup just to sort of bring it all back to life. Yeah. You'd have to run it through. You would you'd need to then do a brief incantation to get the souls back into the prawns. No, but like these prawns, they just sat in. It was slopped out into the baguette, sort of dripping. And it's like, how long have they been on that shelf in those tubs? It certainly wasn't put together on the day.
And that was served then with. A side salad and also a number for a local GP.
That's right.
Some diorolites.
Yeah. And also some advice about how to get your affairs in order. And some life insurance stuff.
Yeah, it's a one-shot wonder, isn't it? There's a little place next door you can go and see all the pros.
Yes.
So speaking of shellfish, shall we ask crabs?
Let's ask the crabs.
First. Yeah. I think that's a good shout.
I think the crabs and both havers and the crabs are going to make easy work of this, this question.
It should be fairly straightforward, shouldn't it?
It's a bit more binary, isn't it, this one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously, crabs live both in the sea and on the land and have
like aquatic both. Chefs.
As they are aquatic, and they are their own chefs. They do everything. They kill, prepare, and consume their sort of chef, restaurateur and customer all in one, aren't they?
Yeah.
And government inspector.
Yeah, the only difference is they are also the billionaire.
That's right.
Anyway, let's go.
They have a hygiene rating of 3. Okay. Let's do it.
Go.
Feel it,
Stop.
Ben. Feel it.
Stop.
Okay. Finger going down.
Okay.
Feel it, Ben. Feel it. Stop. Crab. Feel. What's the question again? Just remind me.
Should he be able to see in international waters? Or,
okay. Yeah. While the claws of many crabs look the same left and right, predatory crabs are typically heterochelous, meaning their cellae are different in size and shape.
Hmm.
The larger cella usually has a crusher role and has blunt molar-like inverted commas, teeth for breaking the shell of hard-bodied prey. The smaller cella, unless it's cella, is more designed for cutting and usually possesses sharper, narrower, inverted commas, teeth and pointed tips to the, inverted commas, fingers. The two cellae thus complement each other to manipulate, crush and tear tissue from prey. I mean, this is absolutely riveting, isn't it? I could read this. All. I mean, this is the sharp end of life, isn't it? This is real. I'm living here, and that crab's living.
I was trying to work out what it all means.
It's literally, its hands are like utensils. Because our hands, you look at them, you're like, what do I do with this? I could write a novel. I could become a ping pong expert. I could be like Matthew Saeed and do both. Whereas a crab looks down and it's got a utensil for crushing, tearing, and pincering. Therefore, it has no. It's not going to write a novel, is it? It's not going to.
But how do we map this onto our correspondence problem?
Well, he might be writing a novel. That might be why he wants to have the 6 months off.
That's true.
You know?
Well, I think it's more about the choice between the blunt instrument of living at sea with no tax,
very
getting paid
Ben.
A big wadge of money.
Very good.
Or is it the more sort of maybe more complicated world of living on the land where it's a bit more complicated? You're paying your tax, you're not getting paid as much, but you maybe have a bit more life balance. So which of those two cellae or lifestyles in this metaphor should he go for?
So this might help. There's a bit of additional information which might help, Ben. The larger right claw, so that's a blunt tool, being a chef at sea, has a specialised supplementary tooth.
Okay.
Honestly, when you look down at your hands and they've got teeth on them, you know that you're going to be in control of the world at some point. So the larger right claw is a specialised supplementary tooth on the outside of the base of the lower finger that is used like a tin opener on gastropod snails.
Oh, those poor sods. They don't have a chance.
They don't have a chance. But obviously snails is something that a chef might cook with.
Yeah.
Like a tin opener is something a chef would use. We're definitely in the world of utensils. The crabs are clearly, they're in the right area, aren't they?
It's suggesting that the big claw is the chef side. Is that what you're...
Well, Ben thinks that the big claw is being at sea.
Yeah, being at sea.
I think the crabs are doing a good job of describing the problem, but not necessarily helping us come down on one side or the other.
Yes. Or perhaps let's bring in Havers.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Maybe Havers can...
It could be, couldn't it?
Because
I think the crabs will know that we're doing this with Havers. Because obviously crabs, there's at least, I think, 200,000 or 300,000 crabs probably on Earth, aren't there? Must be.
Oh, yeah.
And they will have a kind of hive brain. And I think we've been doing this for about half an hour now. They'll be sensing that their hive brain is being applied to, being asked questions, and they'll know about Havers from all of his nude snorkeling. So they'll know about Havers. So let's see.
Okay, so start going. Stop. Stop.
Apart from a couple of tellies here and there, I was still skating on thin ice job-wise. I'd go up for a part, but never managed to get beyond round two of the auditions, apart from a movie called The Go-Between.
Of course! Open and shut. Thank you very much, and good night.
But I think that is an answer, isn't it?
Okay, go on, Ben.
Well, can he become the go-between? Can he sometimes work on the land,
Is it one year on, one year off?
Yes. It's about using both of those different kinds of pincers.
Of course, the crab is so wonderful because it has both pincers. If you've just got a big blunt tool, you're going around hitting things with a cricket bat. But if you've got a cricket bat in one hand and a scalpel in the other, you're in a strong position, aren't you?
Yeah. You're generally swing with a cricket bat first and then move in with the scalpel.
Well, he's
had a go at the cricket bat. Maybe it's time for a little bit of scalpel and then back to the cricket bat.
Then back to that. You bludgeon and stab, bludgeon and stab, bludgeon and stab.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's basically the motto of the SAS, isn't it? It's who dares win and wins, and then underneath that is any doubt, bludgeon and stab.
Brackets. So that seems a bit abstract, just bludgeon and stab.
Yeah, just bludgeon. What we're trying to get at is bludgeon and stab.
Brackets with a cricket bat. Brackets, this is Britain after all.
Yeah. All hell crabs. Crabs preceded us. Crabs will post-seed us. All hell the mother crab. Queen Elizabeth II.
R.I.P.
R.I.P.
Or is it?
Or are they? I said post-seed there again, which isn't a word. I've done that before. Precede and... What's the other one?
What's that?
Post-seed.
Precede and...
Succeed?
Succeed!
Succeed!
That's the one. Great stuff from the crabs there. So actually, but we haven't heard from Havers on this one, have we? I've got quite confused.
Havers clinched it with the go-between.
Oh, of course!
Yes.
There was me thinking that the answer was binary, but it's not. I mean, that's the thing. That's why I don't have the wisdom of the crabs or the Havers.
That's why you don't have the career of Havers, Mike.
Yeah. No chance.
And you don't have the charisma of a crab. Now, what happened? Okay. So, but just quickly, so we're advising him to be like in the go-between. Mm. Just a little postscript. I think that's very good. A little postscript.
Yeah.
At the end of L.P. Hartley's novel, The Go-Between... Yeah. The tragic consequences of the events in the story are fully realised. And the narrator, Leo Colston, reflects on the impact these events have had on his life. These include... some pretty bad stuff happens. So it could be that the crabs are having a little... There might be a little pincering in the tail, possibly.
Oh, we're not saying it's going to be easy.
We're not saying it's going to be easy. But
give it a go on land, just with the knowledge that you can go back to sea if you need to.
Yeah, so few of us have that escape. Yeah. You know, for most of us, that's just that's an escape fantasy, nothing more.
Also, little question, can any of us think of a certain animal we know that spends a lot of its time underwater, then scuttles up onto the beach, and then scuttles back into the water? Nigel Havers. It's not a coincidence. He's Britain's leading amphibious actor. Isn't he, to this day? Which is why he's so pissed off he didn't get a role in Jaws. He'd been brilliant for it.
But he is the lead in Avatar 5. Can't wait.
That's true. Okay, fantastic. Well, I mean, I feel like we've... What do you reckon?
Is that enough problems solved?
I feel like we've... Well, I don't know.
We've solved a lot of problems, haven't we?
I think we've done three. Feels like a good number, doesn't it?
Yeah,
we've done three, and we
went deep. We went deep on all three, and we. Yeah. Well, I think we're going to have to return to this. There's people who've already sent in problems, and
Well, so put it this way: we've got 112 problems.
Okay,
and we've dealt with
and
three.
A crab ain't one.
And so we must now conclude the session by doing. What we traditionally do, we have to thank the crabs.
Thank you, crabs.
Thank you, crabs.
And we must thank Nigel Havers.
Yeah.
Thank you, Havers.
Thank you, Havers.
And thank you, the listener, the patron.
Thank you, the patron. Beans.
Thank you so much.
Are you going to say thank you?
Come on, I'm saying thanks.
I've just been a bit restless.
I also wonder, Ben, you know, at some point we could also open up other books to accompany the crabs.
Of course.
So, you know, people have suggestions.
Never to replace the crabs, you're saying?
Well, I think the crabs are... The true custodians of all wisdom, aren't they?
Yeah.
So, probably a bit
Mike's
rude to
manhandling that. Pam in.
Yeah, sorry.
She's not cooperating at all.
She's demanding. She wants. She wants to play. She wants to play under the desk. Is what she wants to do. And I'm obliging.
Anyway, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you. And we'll leave you with the words of Nigel Havers.
Yes, good way to finish off. Yes. Why don't you finish off with the final words of Nigel's book?
Being read by a human being for the first time. Live on air.
Okay, so remember, kids, whatever the future held, I'd be able to take a break from playing with fire. Lovely stuff.
Really nice.
I prefer one that's about half the page up from the end, which is just... It's a one-line paragraph that simply reads, I wheeled my horse and cantered towards her.
And, of course, we don't know if that's an actual horse and an actual her or if it's a CG her and a...
We don't know.
And a rubber horse and it's all taken part.
Could be a pommel horse. We don't know this.
With Havers' life, the distinction between fact and fiction is pretty blurred. By the way, I've never read this one. I'm going to read the last line from the book about crabs.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
May the spirit of the crab bring peace and prosperity into all of our lives. That's genuinely the last line. It's so written by a crab. Peter J.F. Davey, you pincered bastard.